I'm Rodney Williams.
And I'm Travis Holloway. Welcome to The Wealth Break.
Let's be honest. Building wealth doesn't look the same for everyone. It's not just about saving. It's about investing. It's about navigating systems that weren't built for you, embracing your hustle, and relying on your community to create something bigger.
And that's exactly why we created The Wealth Break. We made something different, something more human. It's not just another financial podcast. It's a conversation about real life, real struggles, and real wins.
We're here to talk about the journey. You're here from people who've broken barriers, found creative ways to succeed, and learned to build wealth on their terms. Whether it's the first-time homeowner, a gig worker, or someone turning a side hustle into a six-figure business, we're bringing you their stories.
And we're not stopping at success stories. We're breaking down the realities, like what it means to take risk, how to navigate failure, and why resilience matters. Because wealth isn't about money. It's about creating a life where you can thrive and help others to do the same.
So if you're ready for a podcast as much as about people as it is about money, you're in the right place.
Listen to The Wealth Break podcast on the iHeartRadio app.
This is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
Continuing my conversation with Kaif Abdul-Ahad. The new book is A Stranger in Your Own City, Travels in the Middle East Long War. It is the years 2011, 2012, and 2013, on the eve of much, much more violence than even in that first decade following the American conquest and occupation of Baghdad and Iraq. Kaif, a very good evening again to you, and we begin the conversation with a high school friend of yours, whose name, nom de guerre, is Hassan. You find him sheltering in his family's home in the northern part of Baghdad, behind locked doors. This is a Baghdad that is unrecognizable from 15 years before. It's divided into concrete blocks, and also people are keeping neighborhoods of Shia, Sunni, and everything in between. Hassan, what does he tell you about his life and his medical degree and how he is living? Good evening to you again.
Good evening, John. I mean, Hassan was a high school friend, and we used to walk from my high school into his house when we ran away from school to avoid one of these spontaneous demonstrations. But after the first phase of the Civil War, trying to retrace my footsteps, my route back into Hassan's house, I realized that the neighborhoods have been divided. There are two walls now separating the high school from Hassan's house, and that to go into that, one needs to leave one enclave, drive up and down a highway, enter a second enclave to find another neighborhood. And of course, the whole geography of Baghdad had changed by that time. I managed to trace him. I managed to find him. And of course, he tells this story. I mean, we as journalists, we witness the horror, you know, selectively. We go, we see a story, we come back. But for the people of Baghdad, and Hassan was like them, they had to live through it day by day. So he describes the time when a car bomb went right in front of him, when he was stopped at the checkpoint and they asked for ID card and he could have been killed. So all these stories were, the common experience of Baghdadis at the time.
The state of corruption, which is how you present this transformation from the first civil war that ended 2007 with the defeat of the Sunnis, and the second civil war where it's all against all. We will explicate. The state of corruption is that the regime in Baghdad, Maliki's regime, is dominated by men and players who are eager for money and are endorsing the sectarian conflict, making money on the sectarian conflict. How do they see their role? The Americans are about to leave Baghdad formally in 2011. In that time of between the end of the first civil war and the exit of the Americans, how is Maliki's government regarded in Baghdad?
Well, John, I mean, Maliki had an amazing opportunity to end the civil war because by 2008, the Sunnis, as you say, were defeated. Many of their former insurgents commanders had turned into allies with the Americans. They fought with the Americans against the jihadis. They were expecting to be reincorporated into the society, given jobs, given salary, the same thing that was happening with the Shia militia commanders. Instead, Maliki pursues a very sectarian policies, going after those, not only those commanders, the former commanders, but also going after former Sunni politicians, the vice president, others. And that kind of entrenched this sense of, you know, this Sunni defeat, the Sunni disillusionment with the government of Nur al-Maliki. Next. And of course, yes.
Please continue.
So Nur al-Maliki also, in the second elections, he came second. The winner of the elections was a coalition of secular, trans-sectarian coalition of Sunni, Shia, Kurds, and Arabs. But the Americans and the Iranians both wanted Nur al-Maliki. The Iranians, because he was their client. The Americans, they thought and it's Biden, by the way, who was leading the Iraq portfolio, they thought they can deal with a strong man, a Shia strong man like Nur al-Maliki. So they allow Nur al-Maliki, who came second, to manipulate the votes, to get a ruling from the Supreme Court. And many believe that the kind of whatever Iraqi democracy we had died that day when Nur al-Maliki was allowed to form a government again. That government, as you said, was built on corruption, was building a patronage client network. The military was turned into money-making machines, military units which had soldiers on the paper in the thousands, in reality had nothing more than hundreds, and the rest, the difference, were salaries siphoned by the military commander. That was the state of the Iraqi army and the security forces at the eve of ISIS emergence and the Second Civil War.
Yes, the Second Civil War begins with next door Syria collapsing in its own civil war, bringing in from across the Ummah. I have a list: Turks, Chechens, Tajiks, Pakistanis, and all of them gathering in Syria, but they'll quickly spill over into Iraq. And the question is, who is against whom? It gets lost. The Free Syrian Army starts as an idea to oppose Assad, and it becomes an aspect, a recruiter for al-Nusra. What is al-Nusra's place? That's al-Qaeda's Syrian presentation. What is al-Qaeda's place in Iraq at this time? We've not spoken of the jihadis much other than to reference Zarqawi, but how does al-Nusra present itself?
Well, John, by 2008-09, basically al-Qaeda in Iraq was defeated. They fled the major cities, the major Sunni cities. They ended kind of somewhere in the desert region between Syria and Iraq. And that was the situation that al-Qaeda found itself at the eve of the Syrian civil war. The Syrian civil war created the opportunity, as you say, everyone against everyone, the chaos of the Free Syrian Army. Everyone is funding them. Europeans, Gulf Arab countries are arming them. The Iranians are there. The Russians come later. So in that chaos of the Syrian civil war, the jihadis find a niche for themselves. They equip themselves. They arm themselves by fighting other battalions, capturing weapons, many Western-supplied weapons. And unlike the other kind of militias, the jihadis are very disciplined. So they build their own internal or recreate their internal networks, reconnect with their people across the border in Iraq. And it's then in this kind of, in the really charged sectarian atmosphere in the Middle East, that a Sunni attempt to mimic or recreate the Arab Spring in Iraq basically deteriorate or collapses into an ISIS takeover of Sunni towns and cities.
And finally, the Friday of Anger, December 2012. This is on the eve of what we know to be the rise of the Islamic State. That's Sunni rising, correct? All, and they're united in their opposition to Maliki and nothing else?
It is another one of these moments in Iraqi history that you would stop and think, this is another crucial moment. Again, the Sunnis, or the Sunni leaders, I have to say, the Sunni leaders, tribal elders, bunch of mavericks, who decide to go into another fasting deal, again with the jihadis, thinking we will use the jihadis to defeat Maliki, and then we will take over again. But of course, I mean, they tried this once, and they failed, and they tried it again. And of course, they will fail. So what started as genuine Sunni demonstrations soon was infiltrated by the jihadis, by other elements, and within the chaos. I mean, look, it's the same story everywhere. It's in Afghanistan, it's in Iraq, it's in Yemen. The jihadis are, they benefit from the chaos created by civil wars, by foreign invasion, by Western intervention. And in that chaos, the jihadis as a small disciplined force can find a space for themselves. They did the same thing in Iraq after 2012. They captured a couple of towns, but their biggest ultimate victory was capturing Mosul, Iraq's second biggest city. And that happened, again, because Maliki or the Iraqi army forces, security forces there were perceived as sectarian, as oppressive, oppressing the people. And ISIS portrayed itself at the beginning as quote-unquote liberators to the people of Mosul. The corruption within the Iraqi security forces led to their defeat, collapse. They withdrew from the city, leaving tons of equipment, Humvees and, you name it, in the hands of ISIS, which again led to unspeakable kind of atrocities.
I learned from Haith that it's 500 miles or kilometers from Baghdad to Mosul. I can't remember, Haith.
Kilometers,
yes. 500 kilometers. And along that is a road of horror. And we're going to one city in particular that illustrates the Sunni disorder, and that's Ramadi. This is a stranger in your own city, travels in the Middle East long war. Raif Abdul Ahad is the author. I'm John Mack.
I'm Rodney Williams.
And I'm Travis Holloway. Welcome to The Wealth Break.
Let's be honest. Building wealth doesn't look the same for everyone. It's not just about saving. It's about investing. It's about navigating systems that weren't built for you, embracing your hustle, and relying on your community to create something bigger.
And that's exactly why we created The Wealth Break. We made something different, something more human. It's not just another financial podcast. It's a conversation about real life, real struggles, and real wins.
We're here to talk about the journey. You're hearing from people who've broken barriers, found creative ways to succeed, and learned to build wealth on their terms. Whether it's the first-time homeowner, a gig worker, or someone turning a side hustle into a six-figure business, we're bringing you their stories.
And we're not stopping at success stories. We're breaking down the realities, like what it means to take risk, how to navigate failure, and why resilience matters. Because wealth isn't about money. It's about creating a life where you can thrive and help others to do the same.
So if you're ready for a podcast as much as about people as it is about money, you're in the right place.
Listen to The Wealth Break podcast on the iHeartRadio app.
Having MG can make cooking difficult, but over the years, I've found some really helpful tools and tips that I'm excited to share. Hi, I'm Alicia. I think cooking should always be fun, creative, and of course, delicious. These black bean burgers are hearty, full of flavor, and MG friendly. You're gonna love them.
Check out Alicia's Black Bean Burger cooking video and other recipes full of tips and tricks for managing common MG symptoms while cooking, only at mg-united.com.
Ready? Let's cook.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Support American-made, tariff-free clothing with American Giant with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.